All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, January 19th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is a balmy 16 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. We had a whole weekend full of lake effect snow. At least we're not buried like some of the other cities, but I'd have to say there's a good 6 inches or so out there right now. So where did we leave off on Friday? We titled the show DNA Cures, CRISPR, Ethics, and 2.0 Humans. Yeah, there's a lack thereof ethics, but lots of CRISPR going on to make us all human 2.0. Pretty interesting, but over the weekend, actually, I have to try to find the episode. I think my husband recorded it for me while I was standing there with my mouth open, pointing, going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. But right before I came down here to get some work done after dinner, oh, what day was that? I don't know what day that was. I think that must have been Sunday. I don't know, long weekends. It was Martin Luther King Day yesterday, and all the kids were off, and it really makes the weekends bleed together. I think it was Sunday, maybe. After dinner, there was a show on in History Channel that I guess was already about a year old, but the entire show was about CRISPR technology, but not just CRISPR technology. It started spinning into the topics we like to talk about, like, what if, well, hey, what if we have this CRISPR technology and we could do all these wonderful things? What could happen if it got into the hands of evil ones? And they started spinning all these scenarios about all the evil things that they could do with gene editing and the human race. And I got to tell you, it was very scary because it's everything that we talked about, just all this insanity of mixing. You know, we spent a lot of time last week looking at animal-human hybrids. And, of course, now they're trying to spin these animal-human hybrids as, you know, medical research, and this is necessary, and we're going to find cures to this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, maybe it'll help. I mean, some of the stories we actually read said that there really isn't even any scientific justification for doing this right now, except for the fact that they think that they might be able to find a cure. But as far as the ethical end of things, they can't really provide a good reason. To me, that's very disturbing. You know, cloning and genetically editing live mammals. I don't know if we actually got to that one or not yesterday. I have some of that stuff queued up here. All right, let's continue from where we left off last week because there's been a lot of news since then. Chinese scientists, and I think we looked at this yesterday, just admitted to tweaking the genes of the first human embryo, and we knew this was coming. And, oh, yes, and in that special I saw just snippets of before I came down here on Sunday, they said exactly what we had postulated, that in tweaking of the human genome, which, again, you know, here and globally they're saying, well, this isn't very ethical, but in China, China doesn't give a shit. But, you know, one of the first things they're going to start with when they start looking for your dollars, and it is just going to be for the people who can afford it, is what color hair, what color eyes, and what sex you want your new push button, order like a pizza menu child. And once that happens, though, next generation, as they start learning where these other traits are, of course, they'll be able to make superhuman traits. And we talked about those as well. There were some that were easy to do, and that was intelligence, speed, artisticness. But I'm sure as they crack more and more of the genome, they'll be able to tweak more and more, obviously. And it's happening at an exponential pace as technology is increasing. All right, so the other story, and this is the one I don't think we got to do very much of, was CRISPR gene editing tool used to treat genetic disease in an animal for the very first time. For the first time, scientists have used CRISPR gene editing technology to successfully treat a genetic disease inside a fully developed mammal. Now wait, because I found even more. They're using it on humans in the UK. Yes, they are. CRISPR editing is a process where scientists can rewrite genetic code of an organism by cutting out and replacing components of its individual DNA. And yeah, they use this to treat an adult mouse with muscular dystrophy. But hold the phone, Charles, because listen to this. This is a story that I ran across yesterday, January 18, 2016, from the Telegraph. Quote, unquote, miraculous results from new multiple sclerosis treatments. Wheelchair-bound multiple sclerosis patients able to walk again after stem cell therapy. A pioneering new stem cell treatment is reversing and then halting the potentially crippling effects of multiple sclerosis. Patients embarking on the groundbreaking trial of this new treatment have found that they can walk again and that the disease even appears to be stopped in its tracks. Holly Drew, 25, from Sheffield, who was wheelchair-bound and now has her daughter, Isa, now too. But Miss Drury, claims that the new treatment has transformed her life. She told BBC's Panorama program, "I could not walk steadily. I could not trust myself holding the baby if I fell. Being a new mom, I wanted to do this all properly, but my MS was stopping me." Well, the treatment is being carried out at Royal Halmarsher Hospital in Sheffield and King's College, London. Wait till you guys hear this. And involves a high dose of chemotherapy to knock out some of the immune system before rebuilding it with stem cells taken from the patient's own blood. Now, that's a lot how they treat some of the leukemias, where they irradiate you and they kill all your bone marrow. And then they replace it with some bone marrow donor cells so it all grows back and starts producing your platelets and that back in your blood again. But for MS, and they're saying it's because MS, they think that the MS is causing inflammation of the spinal cord. Not that it's an autoimmune or anything like this, which a lot of MS is. But just, you know, and this is insane because this isn't the first stem cell treatment that we've seen. And they are, and I have some really crazy stuff I ran across after this yesterday. So, all right, let's finish this. Her treatment is now being reviewed and her condition found to have been dramatically halted. She said the treatment is being carried out to knock out the immune system. And then they rebuild the immune system with stem cells taken from the patient's own blood. She said, "I started seeing changes within days of the stem cells being put in. I walked out of the hospital and I walked into my house and hugged my daughter. I cried and cried. It was a bit overwhelming. It was a miracle." Ding, ding, ding. Now, she's a 1.0 and she's here to sell this MS treatment to you. Do you hear this? Now, it's very possible that by killing, irradiating yourself to wipe out your entire immune system and then putting your stem cells that you were smart enough to take before you got irradiated back into you to rebuild your immune system, it is absolutely possible that that could work. I could actually see how that could work. But this is new procedures. These are brand new, never before tried. It's a miracle. Oh my God. Step right up and become the guinea pig. and we're going to do case studies, right? Isn't that the way they said they're going to sell this 21st century medicine? Well, this is a classic example of a case study. Notice how there's nothing in here about federal regulators say that this treatment is safe. It's been approved for use in humans. Notice how you don't hear any of those key phrases in here? No, because she went for this treatment and let them do something that probably just a few years ago would have completely killed her to see what the results would be. And this time they got lucky. Anyway, your treatment is has now been reviewed. So there you go. It's now that she's had the treatment, they're reviewing it. And her condition is found to have been dramatically halted. She will need to now be monitored for years. But the hope is that her transplant will be a permanent fix. For other patients, the results have been equally dramatic. Steve's story was a marathon runner and triathlete before he was struck down with the disease and left completely paralyzed. I couldn't flicker a muscle, he said. But within 9 days, just nine, count them, nine. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 days of the treatment, he could move his toe. And after just 10 months, he managed a mile-long swim in the Lake District. He has also managed to ride a bike and to walk again. It was great. I felt I was back, he said. Mr. Story celebrated his first transplant birthday with his daughters. His treatment has been reviewed, and like Ms. Drury, there was no evidence of the active disease. Again, ding, ding, two case studies. This treatment, which effectively reboots the immune system, is the first to reverse the symptoms of MS, which has no cure and affects around 100,000 people in Britain. Stem cells are so effective because they can become any cell in the body based on their environment. And right, we talked about just a few days ago how, you know, they've been able to now coax stem cells that you can even make from your own skin. They've been able to coax stem cells into turning into any bodily cells that you need to create. That's how they were making the those genetically modified animals that were grown without necessary organs. They were putting then the human stem cells into those areas of the DNA for the heart or for the lungs or for whatever Frankenstein animal they were deciding to grow in the lab that day. Although it is unclear what causes MS, some doctors believe that it is the immune system itself which attacks the brain and the spinal cord, leading to inflammation and pain, disability, and in severe cases, death. Professor Basil Chirac, a consultant neurologist at Sheffield Teaching Hospital, NHS Foundation Trust, said, quote, Since we started treating patients 3 years ago, they've been doing tests like this. Some of the results we've seen have been miraculous. This is not a word I use lightly, but we have seen profound neurological improvements. And during the treatment, the patient's stem cells are harvested and stored. And then doctors use aggressive drugs, which are usually given to cancer patients, to completely destroy the immune system. And then the harvested stem cells are infused back into the body, where they start to grow new red and white blood cells within just weeks. Within a month, the immune system is back up and running fully, and that's when the patient begins to notice that they're recovering. However, specialists warn that patients need to be fit to benefit from the new treatments, and make sure you're healthy. The research has been published in the Journal of American Medical Association. And I mean, not like I said, not like they haven't done stuff like this before. Leukemias, I mean, that was always how I understood they fought leukemia, is that they pretty much did your body in as far as the bone marrow and it producing the blood cells, and then they replaced them with a marrow donation and let your system regrow itself. But the problem is, these are very new. These are very untested. Okay, so maybe they've been doing it for 3 years in England. How many people did they lose in that time would be my question. I mean, he said we've had some success. Sure, look at how miraculous it is. But this is not something that is well established, that's for sure. Here's another one. I can get this one to load. It says flash has crashed. So come on, here we go. All right, this one, I got it to load. And I think we actually read this title, but I don't think we did the story on Friday. I don't know, long weekends just totally make you go, huh? What happened? When? Where? Hold on. It loaded, now it didn't load. Using DNA to cure brain cancer, January 9, 2016. Oh, maybe we didn't read this one. Maybe I just read the title because I don't remember this university name. UNC Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center scientists have examined the way an enzyme fixes DNA as the basis for developing a technique for fighting brain cancer. Cells, when dividing, utilize an enzyme called DICER, and this helps cells repair any DNA damage that occurs when errors are made as cells copy genetic material again and again, as is required in the production of new cells. Scientists have used their knowledge of DICER's role in repairing DNA as a new technique to kill rapidly dividing cancerous cells in the brain. Through studies, we're not going to tell you what kind of studies necessarily in detail. Then the research group found that when they extract DICER from preclinical models of medulloblastoma, which is the common type of brain cancer in children, they noticed high levels of DNA damage in the cancer cells. The damage led to the death of the cells, and subsequent tumors became smaller, and the remaining cancer cells appeared more sensitive to chemotherapy. In a research note, Professor Mohanish Deshmukha, who led the study, noted that this is the first time that the specific function of DICER for DNA damage has been looked at in the context of the developing brain or even in brain tumors, despite the fact that the protein has been extensively studied. So it is now hoped that the research will prevent cancer development or make a brain tumor more sensitive to chemotherapy. And anything like the DICER enzyme that contributes to cancer cell DNA weakening will make any other treatments more effective. So I thought it was interesting. They found a protein to target that might make brain cancer DNA more susceptible to chemotherapy. Now, I don't know if they've done any testing for curcumin from a technical, real scientific level on brain cancers, but there is quite a bit of research out there on curcumin and ovarian cancer cells becoming much more susceptible to chemotherapy. And they aren't just ovarian cancer cells, they are the most aggressive and resistant cells they discovered became much more responsive to chemotherapies. And as a matter of fact, I mean, the curcumin has been shown to cause apoptosis in a lot of the cancer cells. So I don't know if you're considering any type of chemotherapy before I'd go have like my entire body irradiated and all my immune system killed. I'd be looking at some other stuff before I stepped up for this. I mean, I know. And look at how many people are dying of cancer right now. We just had another one. Glenn Frey, the Eagles, yesterday I saw of some pretty strange, it was like inflammatory bowel disease, arthritis, and pneumonia. And I didn't read the whole story, but from what I saw yesterday, after it just happened, it looked like they were maybe in New York for being inducted into some sort of honorary position. And he got sick while he was there and he passed away. Glenn was only 67. Bowie was 69. Lemmy was 70, I believe. Just a lot of death here in 2016. All right, companies. Actually, no, this isn't the one I wanted. Hold on, we got to find this one with this lady. This lady was crazy. We've talked about this before in regards to the Fountain of Youth. Here she is. And it's funny because this weekend when I was talking to a friend of mine, I'd actually brought up the study and I had no idea that they were doing research on this again. It says cancer is 90% curable in kids. So how can we make old bodies feel young again? And I don't know where he ever found out that cancer was 90% curable in kids. I mean, how about all this childhood cancer that these kids aren't being cured from? But okay. It says a little known scientific experiment, and we read about this experiment in which researchers reversed the aging process in rodents, was recently repeated by three major medical institutions. Now, this is where you're going to go, huh? Harvard, Stanford, and the University of California, San Francisco. And the results confirm that it is possible to manipulate the aging process, allowing us to maintain a higher quality of life for longer. Now, wait a second. Where was this actual, because this is a short, oh, I know, the transcript is here. Okay. Now, it's funny because in this Big Think story, which is kind of a propaganda machine, this Big Think, but I still get good titles out of here and I dig up a little bit. But one of the things that's interesting is that they don't mention in the actual story what this experiment was that they just reproduced at Harvard, Stanford, and the University of California, San Francisco to make the old young again. But if you guys remember, the one thing that we learned about, and I don't remember what the process was called, but I literally was just talking about the Sunday night before I found the story yesterday, was where they had been taking the blood of young animals and connecting up the blood vessels with old animals. So like they had mice and they were connecting the blood vessels of young mice with the blood vessels of old mice. So the young blood could literally circulate into the older animal and vice versa. And they had a role reversal. The older animal got younger and the younger animal got older. Now, all these years we've heard like horrible stories about children and royals and all this. I don't know. I always thought it was all lunatic science. But I hate to tell you, when we dug into whatever this procedure is called, where you connect the blood vessels of two creatures together, they've been doing that research for a few hundred years already. So it's not like there wasn't some inkling already that being exposed to young blood made you younger. And when you start thinking about things such as, you know, Dracula, blah, I'm going to suck your blood, and how he lived forever, you know, Vlad the Impaler really wasn't a vampire. He didn't have wings and fangs. But maybe the young blood for longevity had something to do with it. Anyway, so Harvard, Stanford, and the University of California at San Francisco are now selling this technology as a way, of course, to keep your immune system young to be able to fight off cancer. This is what the take on this is. So anyway, the results confirm that it is possible to manipulate the aging process. And remember, all these tech billionaires are all running after the cure for aging. Confirm that it is possible to manipulate the aging process, allowing us to maintain a higher quality of life for longer. In the fight against cancer, this is crucial. And while the stem cells in young bodies are very effective at overcoming cancer, those cells switch off by the age of 25. Now, did you know that? Did you know, apparently, stem cells in young bodies turn off by the age of 25? I mean, I knew that some of your regenerative properties did, but I didn't know about your stem cells. And then how come they can coax stem cells in your body to start making new cells? And what about that MS treatment we just read about using that woman's own cells? Though she was young, she was 25. Interesting. Interesting. All right, let's get back to that page now. Everything's getting weird over here. All right. If we can discover ways to keep them on, we might all enjoy healthier lives for longer. Now, I don't know. There's actually a 2 minutes. There's a 2 minute audio clip here. You know what? We haven't tried this in a long time. Let's see if we could do this because it is a Tuesday morning. And it's 2016. I don't even know if we played a clip in all of 2016 yet. But you know what? I can't remember my Skype name. Hold on. JJJ. JJJ. There, Jules. Add. Let's see if it works. It might. It might not. Possibly. I don't even see any ringing. So if not, I have the transcript. But this is why I don't even do it anymore, because every time we do Skype, it just throws a big wrench into the show. Because Skype is not responding again. Hopefully it's not locking up the show by trying to call a Skype that isn't responding. Oh, how irritating. Oh, how irritating. No, Skype is so broken now, just beyond broken, just like all the browsers are too. And you know what? The more that they can break everything, the more it slows me down and the more it frustrates people who then decide they don't want to do this anymore. I mean, I see how the game works. All right, I got to hang up on myself because I guess we can't play a clip. But I have the transcript, so screw you, Skype, because here we go. So this is the author in this video that we can't play. I want to tell you one story. And the story came from the early 1950s. A woman named Wanda Ruth Lunsford. She was a scientist in New York City, and she published one paper. Now, she's not the first, by the way, that has published or done research on these young rodents with this blood swapping, okay? I've read, actually, hundreds of years ago, they were manipulating aging using young blood in test subjects, in animal test subjects, by tying their veins and things together. So the blood was literally pumping from one into the other. The woman was named Wanda Ruth Lunsford. She was a scientist in New York City, and she published one paper. That's all she did in her whole life, was one paper. And they told her that she was crazy, by the way. But it was her life's research. But the paper turned out to be her only paper in science, and she was actually pushed out of science because they told her she was a lunatic. What she did was she took an old rat and a young rat, she put them to sleep, and then she tied their skin together. So after about a day or two, their blood supplies joined. And after several weeks later, like, how horrifying is this? She made, like, conjoined rats. And after several weeks later, she looked, and in that old rat, there were new neurons growing in the brain. The heart was beating stronger, and the muscles were bigger. The old rat's gray hair turned brown again, and she claimed that she had reversed aging. People called her Dracula, Frankenstein, and all kinds of crazy names, as you can imagine. Well, earlier this year, three separate laboratories at Harvard, Stanford, and the University of California, San Francisco repeated the same experiment, and it worked. And what they showed is at age 25, and you and me, our stem cells go to sleep and get turned off. And proteins from young mice in this case, or young humans, especially since now we know that we can start cloning and reproducing humans. Like, this is just so frightening. I am seeing laboratories of farmed embryos for stem cells or something. I don't know. This is horrifying. Remember, the rich and powerful will do anything to remain rich and powerful. And remaining young, or even better yet, remaining alive, will be the key to all of that. They'll do anything to discover the key. Proteins from young mice, and in this case, or in young humans, can be used to turn them back on again. And when these stem cells get turned back on, new neurons can be grown. Repair happens much quicker in tissue as well, and we can see that. When a child breaks his leg, he or she is back walking again in a couple of weeks. You don't even know what happened, but when your grandmother breaks her leg, and it hits her quality of life for the rest of her life. So there definitely now are clinical trials. Oh, of course there are. Clinical trials, no FDA approval, I bet, but clinical trials, we could write a case study. And there are now clinical trials using proteins that were found in young individuals. So we're doing it from human to human to try to stimulate bone repair in the elderly who have fractures. And so just like a diabetic requires a shot of insulin so they can manage their sugar, going forward, if you break your leg in the elderly, we may just give you a shot of these proteins to turn back on your stem cells so that you can repair yourself quicker. We're trying it in cancer because cancer in kids is about 90% curable. But once you turn 25, that same cancer and now turns incurable. Now, I don't know where they're getting that from, because I don't know. I've actually known quite a number of cases where we've had young people dying of cancer, children dying of cancer, and their stem cells aren't kicking back on, curing them. So I don't know where they're saying if you get cancer before 25, you're cured. I mean, yes, I'm sure there's a much lower incidence, but it's because you are new. It's because you haven't been exposed to so many horrible things, chemicals, food chemicals, environmental chemicals, radioactive damage, free radical damage, like you have been when you're 45. But I never heard that once you turn 25, the cancer that seemed to be 90% curable in children turned incurable. I question that. I honestly question that. Says, but maybe if I can convince the body that it is younger, or as we as a science community have a bigger impact on cancer. So I leave you with a bit of hope that aging is something that might be able to be reversed. And that's this guy that we're reading his transcript. So not so that we can all live to 150, right? Because guess what? That's not for you or me. Because remember, when they first started talking about being able to live forever and reverse aging, all of a sudden it came up, well, shit, we're already, quote unquote, overpopulated in this blue dot of ours. And if now people live to be 150 years old, well, what are we going to do with all the babies being born? Can't have babies being born and living two lifetimes. Hell no. Well, guess what? So now if we just make living to 150, not for you and me, we could just use this man's science to cure what, try to become a guinea pig for curing what ails us to learn how to do it right. Then we can save this living to 150, like not just when you're sick getting the stem cells, but all the time, stem cell infusions for people like George Soros and Kissinger, old crusties. Keep them going at 250, then everything will be all right. The oligarchs will still be in charge. And you'll be the line item R&D budget for all these cancer and big pharma companies who now don't have to pay for it because you're free. And we could do a case study to sell it to more. So anyway, so I leave you with this bit of hope that, again, aging is something that may be able to be reversed, but not so that we can live to 150, but so that we can all live until our ninth or tenth decade without there being a decrease in the quality of those last decades, because that would be a goal, and quality years till the end. And I mean, yeah, I'd love to be running around like I was 20 when I was 90. But I really don't think that that is going to be for us necessarily to be living to 150. All right, where do we go from here? So that is the story. Let me just move it so it's out of the way. All right, curing cancer, flipping DNA. Here's some interesting things. Talking about reproduction or the lack thereof. We have another flash crash. Hold on, let's try and reload this. Oh, come on. All right, you know what? I have a couple browsers going. Well, I have two stories I'm trying to load right now on this machine, and I'm going to let it think about it and go on to a different story. This is all about reproduction. I have one on X chromosomes, one on Y chromosomes, and one on sperm bots. All right. Here's one titled, and I don't know if I want to start this one because it just flashed. Oh, all right, it looks all right. Here's why the X chromosome evolved to be so weird. The strangest thing we cannot live without. Now, you know, every human has an X and a Y. XX for females, XY for males. You may not be aware of it, but one of your chromosomes, the X chromosome, is considerably different from the rest. And has posed a puzzle for scientists for over a decade. And I'm sure, I mean, maybe only a decade ago they really started looking at it, but I'm sure it's been longer than that. In early in mammalian evolutionary history, what is now the X chromosome was just like any of our other chromosomes, but at some point it evolved to be different. Unlike all other chromosomes, one of the two X chromosomes in women is inactivated in nearly all of their cells. It also has an extremely low mutation rate, and most perplexingly, the genes that are found on it are active in relatively few of our tissues. But now a study we recently published in PLOS Biology has begun to shed light on what is going on, to use a traffic analogy. In human cells, each cell normally contains 23 pairs of chromosomes. Only one of these pairs, the sex chromosomes, differs in men and women. And if you are biologically a woman, you inherited one chromosome from your father and one from your mother. But if you are biologically a man, you inherited one from your mother and a Y chromosome from your father. Like all other chromosomes, the X chromosome carries genes that are used to create proteins that go on to produce observable traits. This happens through a process of transcription in which a single strand copy of the DNA is made, which is then encoded, decoded into a protein. When a gene is processed like this, it is said to be expressed, and essentially, gene expression interprets the genetic information stored in DNA, converting it into its traits. In the 1980s, a study predicted that the genes on X chromosomes should be prone to evolve to be switched on in only one of the two sexes, making them different. And this could explain certain biological differences between women and men. And when the new mutations happen on X chromosomes, their effects in women are subject to selection twice as often as their effects in men. So a mutation that is beneficial in a woman but could harm men could nonetheless persist. Now, so we have all this weirdness going on with the X chromosome. Now wait till you hear this. You know, and this is just as we're seeing now Will Smith's kid. Did you guys see this over the weekend? I don't remember his kid's name, but Will Smith's kid has now decided, and here we go, another sacrificial lamb to get people to jump on board. Will Smith's kid has now decided at 18, he is going through a sex change operation. So we're going to make it normal for pre-18-year-old adults to see this and say, hey, you know what? It hasn't been anything in our environment that's changed us or caused some sort of imbalance in hormones. No, the BPA didn't do it, or all these other pesticides, like in the Syngenta pesticide that we're finding is desexing frogs. No, it's none of that. Be different. Be yourself. Get a sex change. Because, hey, you know what? At 18, I freaking knew everything about the world and was mentally sound enough to make decisions as huge as changing my sex that affected the rest of my life. Yeah. 18 is a really good age. Well, here's another story, and this one actually came out of November 2014 out of Discover Magazine. It says, don't mourn the Y chromosome. What? Yes, what? Don't mourn the Y chromosome because the human Y chromosome may vanish one day. And the start, this isn't me saying this, but perhaps that wouldn't be so bad. Now, we're seeing them creating procreation in petri dishes, right? It was part of the title of one of our shows the other day. They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff in the lab. And eventually, I mean, they even were creating like lab-grown fallopian tubes and wombs. You know, eventually it's going to be the orgasmatron to take care of your biological need for release. And you're going to be able to order a child on your cell phone from the laboratory. You know, we're not going to be able to procreate anymore manually. That's so old school and dirty. Ew. Whether a mammal is a male or a female usually comes down to the sex of its chromosomes. If you're a female, it's XX or XY if you're a male. Now, this is a totally different story, so please excuse me if there's a little overlap. But studies have now shown that the human Y chromosome has degraded over time, losing up to 1,600 genes in only about 200 million years by some estimates. More strikingly, Some mammals, such as the Japanese spiny rat, have shed their Y chromosomes altogether. So what's to stop the human Y chromosome from disappearing, says evolutionary geneticist and molecular biologist Jennifer Marshall Graves of La Trobe University. She contends that the Y chromosome already starts at a disadvantage. Unlike the X, it has no partner for genetic recombination, which is the random exchange of segments between chromosomal pairs. So it can accumulate harmful mutations, leaving it potentially vulnerable. She says that the human Y should disappear in about 4.6 million years if the degradation continues at the current rate that's happening. So guys, only 4.6 million years left for males, and then it's all over. And there's no reason that it actually has to take 4.6 million years. Sudden changes. Now, this is what really raised my attention. Sudden changes? Sudden changes have sparked previous losses in the Y. So we could actually lose the Y chromosome much sooner. Now, you don't think that these sudden changes have anything to do with environmental issues? What's causing these sudden, never before seen changes? Now, let's just be clear, so I guess I'm wrong. A vanishing Y chromosome does not mean vanishing males. Oh, okay. Except the Y chromosome is what makes you male. But instead, Graves suggests that a new sex-determining system might evolve, as it did for the spiny rat. Instead of the XY or the XX, male and female rats now are both XO, meaning that they have a single unpaired X chromosome, an unknown spot or sex in the genetic code now that determines gender. Now, this to me sounds like this is just some sort of evil, horrible eugenics experiment that they're now just going, hey, look, it's working. We have the proof. The Y chromosome is degrading at such a rate now that it's not going to be the 4.6 million years that evolution predicted it would take for males to disappear. No, we're making this happen fast. This is really, 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 really bad. So now that we'll no longer be males, they'll just be gender neutral, just like they wanted. The same could actually happen in humans, she said, with some novel genetic mutation usurping the Y chromosome's role. Well, now that we have the synthetic DNA that they're messing around with, how interesting, too, that new synthetic DNA they called X and Y. So we have C-A-T-G, X and Y. And I remember thinking that when I first saw it, I was like, X and Y. But aren't those like the male and female chromosomes? Yeah, well, they're also the new synthetic biology proteins. Anyway, not everyone agrees, of course. I am convinced that Y genes are too important to be lost, and in the situation of the spiny rats, it is probably just an isolated incident, says biologist Jennifer Hughes of the Whitehead Institute at MIT, the lizard's den. She and others note that Y has been able to keep its important genes through quote-unquote purifying selection, in which the I've never been able to say this word, so let's try it. Deleterious changes are removed over time. Graves realizes our Y may not disappear tomorrow or ever, but she points out that it could fade away given its degraded history. So unless it starts to happen soon, we will just have to live in suspense. I mean, I don't know. You know, the fact that they are able to now change things in a lab so easily, flip switches on and off, mix us with animal DNA and create these chimeras. You know, remember, people, we have now entered into the realm of being able to create new life forms from different areas of the animal, insect, and plant kingdom that were never meant to be intermixed. We have discovered a large majority of the keys to life, how to reproduce it and how to change it, how to damage it and how to kill it, or how to cure disease, right? It's all being done under the guise of curing disease or making you live forever. All right, here's another one with a video that we will not be able to play, but we can read it. Sperm bots. Yes, they now have come out with sperm bots. Sperm bots. Because, hey, the Y chromosomes are degrading. Don't worry about that one. We'll help those spermies. Sperm bots could help women trying to conceive. Sperm that don't swim well rank high among the main causes of infertility. To give these cells a boost, women trying to conceive can now turn to artificial insemination, which we talked about, IVF technology, petri dish procreation, or other assisted reproduction techniques. But successes can be elusive. In an attempt to improve these odds, scientists have developed motorized sperm bots. Yes, they have little spermy robots that can deliver poor swimmers that are otherwise healthy to an egg. And the report appears in the ACS journal called Nano Letters. Artificial insemination is a relatively inexpensive and simple technique that involves introducing sperm to a woman's uterus with a medical instrument, not a turkey baster. That's how they do it in cows. Oh, I guess they could. You could do it DIY at home. Overall, the success rate on the average is under 30%, according to the Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority in the United Kingdom. Seems like the UK is doing a lot of crazy stuff over there. And we're just finding out sprinkles over here. But like I said, behind closed doors, who knows what's going on? The in vitro fertilization, and in the UK, it's actually where they did the first three-parent child as well. In vitro fertilization, it can be more effective, but it is a complicated and expensive process. It requires removing the eggs from a woman's ovaries with a needle, fertilizing them in a petri dish, and then transferring the embryos to her uterus or a surrogate a few days later. Each step comes with a risk for failure. Marina Medina Sanchez, Lucas Schwartz, and Oliver G. Schmidt, as well as their colleagues from the Institute for Integrative Nanosciences at IFW Dresden in Germany, wanted to see if they could come up with a better option than the existing methods. Built on previous work on micromotors, the researchers constructed tiny metal helices, like a helix, like a double helix, like DNA, and that's exactly what it looks like. It's this little tiny spiral thing, just large enough to fit around the tail of a sperm. Their movements can be controlled by a rotating magnetic field, and lab tests have shown that these micromotors can be directed to slip around a sperm cell and then drive it to an egg for potential fertilization and then release it. The researchers said that although much of the work needs to be done before their technique can be clinically tested, the success of their initial demonstration is a promising start. What do you think about that? Like little robo spermy bots. Oh, what next? Well, what next? I think in our last few minutes, we are going to take a look at this one. And I found this one just before late last night, as I could not stay awake anymore to do any more work. And I found this story. This, again, was out of Discover Magazine, January 18, 2016. Dissolvable devices keep tabs on the brain. What? Yeah, we got to go back to the brain. So we're going to hit this tomorrow. And it's a pretty big what if, but what if you could design an implantable medical device that was durable, reliable, and accurate, but it also dissolved completely into harmless materials when its work is done? Now, I don't know, there's a question about harmless materials. When they were first looking at using some of this nano that could dissolve, they were finding that still the key components could end up in your filtration system, like your liver. I don't really know what these are being made out of, and this looks pretty new, but let's read this anyway. The two concepts are a bit incompatible, but John Rogers and his team were up to the challenge of bringing them together. Rogers, a professor of material science, engineering, and bioengineering at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, designed a novel electronic sensor that collects crucial health data following a brain injury or surgery, ding, ding. And then it completely dissolves into the cerebrospinal fluid when they are no longer needed. Rogers says making a what is required completely different class of materials that are not only biocompatible, but also biodegradable, and end products are also biocompatible. So yes, human implants that you can stick in the body, and at some point, yeah, I promise they'll be dissolved. It'll be a great thing. Says, I'm interested in ways to engineer electronics to solve the problems of human health. He says, implantables. And if you can think about that, like advanced wearables, but they will then be devices that are implanted inside the body. Oh, my God. So here it comes, people. It's game on. All right, make sure you stick around. Mr. Kevin Blanch is live up next, and it is Tuesday night. So tons of great radio live at 7 p.m. Eastern. Game on with Ron. 8 are interesting times with Tim Kelly. 9, Primer Time, Michael and Nick. 10, Geo Engineering Watch with Dan. 11, Antimedia with SM Gibson. Have an awesome Tuesday. I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.